Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. This is Nathan Duby from Expert Laser Services. Today's guest is Greg Walters, a man who needs no introduction. He was the Managed Print Services President at the Managed Print Services Association from 2012 to 2015, and is currently the Vice President of Global Sales at Atlas. How are you doing today, Greg?
I'm doing good, Nathan. How are you?
I can't complain. It's a little cold outside, but other than that, I'm doing well.
It is winter, and the end of the year is near. 2017 is right around the corner.
That's the absolute truth. I can't believe it's almost Christmas.
I know. It's cool.
All right. Well,
so what's up today?
I wanted to ask you a few questions about the industry, about certain things that are going on, certain dynamics. And the first question would be, since we connected back in 2009, how has the managed print services industry as a whole changed from then to today? What are some of the positives and what are some of the negatives?
Well, I think the biggest difference between 2009 or 8 or and 10 and today is really comes down to the OEM involvement with MPS, or one of the biggest. There's so many changes that have occurred. It's almost incredible. But I think the OEMs now have all had a program, an MPS program, and either are doubling down on it, like HP, or kind of backing away from it, like maybe, I'm not sure who would admit to not putting as much resources as they once had behind their programs. That's a big difference. I also think that the customers obviously know more about management services than they did back then, and may even be on their second or third engagement. And, you know, it's easy when there's nothing, you know, no rules back in the old days, but now I think expectations have been set beyond the, quote, 30% savings that everyone seemed to guarantee in the beginning. The customer is much more enlightened when it comes to what management services is to them and what they expect out of their providers. So that's a huge difference, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that makes a lot of sense. I've seen a lot of the same things, and I would agree with that. As far as the OEMs are concerned and their offerings today versus 2009, do you think how are they doing with their infrastructures versus 2009? I know that there was a lot of people selling management services from the OEMs, and they were basically trying to sell it like a box. But as you know, you can't fit MPS in a box. Do you think the OEMs are doing better with that today? Because from my standpoint, I work for a value-added reseller. We're an independent remanufacturing company. And one of our things has always been infrastructure. And, you know, we've got hands on every machine, backing up every single machine with a toner cartridge once a month, doing preventive maintenance. And it seemed to me that for a long time, the OEMs were just doing, you know, drop shipping toners and services needed, and it was a matter of days rather than hours. Have you seen any improvement in the OEMs, or do you think that's still pretty much the status quo?
I think it's still pretty much the status quo. I mean, I don't want to, and not all the OEMs. There are some standouts. But if you look at the big ones, most of them are still trying to sell copiers, or maybe even the smaller copiers, still trying to sell machines and, quote, capture clicks, capture prints, et cetera. Just look at what they've done in the last year. If you look at the total number of models released from the OEMs versus the number of programs or enhancements or even number of times they mention their MPS programs, the exposure goes heavily to, you know, new hardware, new devices. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm sure if you look it up, there's at least a dozen new models from one company, another, maybe 20 new models from a different OEM. It seems as though, to me, from the outside, that they're releasing the same amount of new models, new hardware devices, as they were back in 1999. So it's almost counterintuitive if you're on the outside looking in. You know, prints are down. Every single OEM has had negative numbers, negative revenue in both hardware and on the service and supply side, on the supply side, for sometimes,
right,
you know, running 8-9 quarters in a row. So it's kind of befuddling at first. It's like, well, you know, they are tripling down on their hardware business. That's what they're doing.
In general,
I can mention, you know, Big Blue, Mother Blue is trying to run or move into the Print Intelligence model. They're a pretty good They've got a good model to run with, and I think they can pull it off. Other than that, I don't see any huge impact in MPS unless you're on a global scale or maybe the national scale for many of the OEMs. I agree with you. I think that, and if you talk to independent dealers, well, the numbers are down for the OEM, and I don't know if they're just, you know, if everyone's riding the rainbow somewhere, but most of the dealers are saying their business is going pretty good, pretty well. And even the bigger guys who get deep down into it, their MPS contracts and engagements have been increasing over the last few years. So it's kind of interesting. I think your independent dealers are closer to the customers, just like you know, they're supposed to be, and have a better chance to capture and maintain a relationship. I shouldn't even say capture, but establish and build a relationship over years in the SMB and even in the you know, medium-sized enterprises. So interesting stuff turning. I don't know what's going to happen in 2017.
Yes, I mean, nobody really does. From my perspective, I would back up everything that you said. What gives the smaller guys like us an upper hand is we're closer to our customer base. We deal directly with our end users on a regular basis. You know, we're providing you know, a level of service that you really can't on a global scale, because, you know, if you live on one side of the world and your clients live on the other, I mean, obviously you can travel back and forth, but there's a disconnect in exactly how close you can be to your clients versus what an independent, you know, value-added reseller, remanufacturer, or independent dealers such as my company can offer. You know, I guess basically those are the main changes that we're seeing, and I would agree with all of your sentiments.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. You had mentioned, we talked a bit about equipment in there. I mean, the name of your blog, which is probably the most well-known blog in the industry, The Death of the Copier, pretty much has, you know, certain introspective ideas in its title. Now, I'm noticing that I'm personally selling a lot more A4 MFPs versus A3. Do you have any insights onto why that might be? Because I'm definitely seeing that to be across the board with competitors, and it seems like OEMs are moving towards that as well.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, 2008, back when I was not back, but I had was a practice manager MPS. We had what today would be a reasonably small fleet, but we had some pretty big customers. Did some quick analysis after, you know, on our fleet. By the fleet, came to the realization that less than 5% and closer to 3% of the output for the total fleet under contract was 11x17, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And close to 92%, you know, anywhere between 85 to 92% of the devices in the field were 11x17 capable. In one specific account, there were 1,400 devices. Less than 2% of the output was 11x17, but 99% of the devices had 11x17 capabilities. And that was,
yeah, I'm not shocked by those stats at all.
Yeah.
I feel like it's probably still like that
today.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I looked at, you know, the way I defined a copier, right off the bat, was 11x17, right? Because you put books on it, you could copy big, you know, actually had a large scanner, capable to scan in book pages and things like that. So that to me was a copier. And the other thing that to me was, you know, you filled toner with a bottle. You didn't replace in cartridges. So to me that was a copier. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the output had never equaled the capabilities. And if you look at copiers, even back in the day, and just like, you know, how many people use 100% of everything that Microsoft Word provides? Nobody. So when you got right down to it and you had these copiers out there that could scan, fax, collate, blah, 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 all this whiz-bang things that you did in a demo, when it gets right down to it, your end users are putting something on the glass and pushing the green button. That's it. They might duplex. This is back in the day, okay? And there was
no, that's the truth. And that's how it is still today. I mean, yesterday I was at an install with a client, an A4 MFP. And, you know, we were talking to him about, the IT guy was discussing the various things that it can do. And he, like, 99% of my customers say, well, that's great. I don't need to worry about that. I just want to copy, print, scan, and fax. And so, you know, even fax is dying. People are doing that less and less.
Yep.
But it almost always comes down to that. And I mean, you know, I'm going to be frank. Like, I've never installed a Konica Minolta, for example, which we sell, and, you know, which can do everything in the world except make you coffee. Now, I mean, the espresso machine might be something they should consider in the future. But that being said, I've never sold a machine. I've never that had a, you know, a biometric thumb plate. I've never had anyone ask questions about the internet connectivity and the applications that it can run. I mean, that's still pretty much new, but it's still, even to today, it's just how it is. I don't want to copy, print, scan, and fax, and I don't want to have to know how to run a computer to do it. I mean, I can't tell you how many clients say, I just wish I could get one of the old machines where there was only a couple of buttons, and you go up, press one, and hit copy, and it's done. You know, now a lot of devices have basically tablets, smart screens.
Right.
And yet, despite all of the things that this technology can do, we're not seeing the customer base actually desire the majority of it.
Right. And that's been a challenge that our industry has had, well, not quite recently, but from the very beginning, we, you know, our devices were designed with what we thought people needed. And at one point,
right.
the designs met the needs and the demand. For the last at least 8 years, we've been struggling to make a copier relevant again in the business world. And it just isn't doing it. You swung right in. Who wants another keyboard in their life?
Right.
To go, what, download recipes off the internet or something like that? I mean, you know what, there's always going to be someone who can rationalize the existence of a keyboard, you know, with the cloud document pull-downs and all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is most end users just don't want another reason to go stand next to a copier. It's just not there. I think, though, what's happening is as print and output has been decreasing, I think that people making copies have actually dropped. I don't have any, you know, this is just a theory of mine. I think that printers have gotten cheaper. They've gotten more capable. They, you know, because volumes have gone down, you know, you don't have an employee out there who's kicking out 10,000 images a month on their own. Right, they may do 500, maybe. So that falls right in the realm of the smaller devices. The smaller devices are less expensive, so your IT or your decision maker is going to say, okay, it's just $300 or $400. Put it in there, keep my users happy. If they never use it, I'm fine with that. Right? That's actually a decision process.
I mean,
naturally, outside of our industry, workflows are just becoming more and more digital, whether we help them or not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as someone, and from my perspective, I'm not seeing that quite as much. But as someone who's keeping a close tab on the technology sector, I'm definitely seeing that more in larger corporations, the health sector, education. People are genuinely moving away, getting rid of entire laser printer fleets, or vice versa. But it depends. It's still case sensitive. You know, like a smaller vendor such as my company, we deal with a lot of clients, and I mean, sometimes they have two or three centralized devices, or, you know, maybe as much as like 10, 20, 30, 40, whatever, and people just go and walk over to their copiers. But a lot of people are still in love with their HPs. I mean, we have clients who won't let go of their HP 6s, their 6Ps, and things like that. I mean, there's not a ton of them, but they covet them because it's true what they say. You know, they don't build them like they used to. And I guess the point in that is just saying that I agree with your sentiment to an extent, but there's, I think, a disconnect between the small to SMB and then to the full enterprise. I'm seeing more of what you're talking about in the largest of the large, whereas there's still opportunity for its antithesis in, you know, regional areas in each, you know, state and country across the world where smaller vendors can find opportunities where maybe the OEMs can't.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think the smaller partners obviously can be much more flexible, can serve the needs of the SMB better than the big OEMs and the directs. The only caution on the small side is, like everyone says, you can get stamped out by either changing demand, which we're seeing, or, you know, extreme competition from a bigger company, like, you know, in the old days, the big box guys coming in. Right now, it's so dynamic that I think to be a smaller provider and address the SMB is just as dangerous as it has been in the past. I don't think it's any more dangerous. I think competitively, the folks in that channel should be able to compete toe-to-toe with any of the big, quote, big guys.
Right.
And then if it doesn't work, have the flexibility to move into something else, whether that's, you know, managed IT or any other type of service. You know, you're quicker to move and respond. And then on the other side, I mean, we're seeing a lot of these independent dealers all start to collect. I mean, we're, you know, there are companies buying other companies almost certainly every month. There's another dealership who's bought up by another dealership.
Absolutely.
As a good thing too. Yeah.
I see it as a good thing, and then there's also the long term. I mean, my company, Expert Laser Services, we purchased one of our competitors, a company called Page After Page. We're located in Southridge, Mass. They were located in Shrewsbury, and you know, we took on their entire employee base, and we're currently dealing with their customers. That this took place over the about a year, maybe a year and a half or so at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been very good for us. I mean, it virtually doubled the size of our company, and everyone has integrated very well, and we've kept the majority of the customers, which, you know, it's common to lose some when you merge like that, particularly from the side that gets bought. But we actually did very well with that. And what's interesting is with us as a remanufacturing company, I'm going to kind of switch gears here and kind of take a look at remanufactured toner, is while we do struggle going up against corporate pricing with companies like Xerox or any of the direct OEMs, like for hardware, particularly copiers and MFPs, we still have a leg up going into an organization that has, you know, anywhere from 100 to 500 laser printers and getting a program, even going against those folks, because most of them don't really care. They want to sell their boxes, and they don't want to sell a robust service program, which we do. And because we're using our own remanufactured toners, we usually have a leg up in that respect. So while, you know, it is something I'm noticing, we're going against the OEMs direct for copiers and MFPs, and they're very competitive, and, you know, sometimes we lose deals to them. But there's two sides to that coin. One, the way the OEMs do business is we're talking about buying companies. Well, they'll buy a lot of the little guys, give them corporate pricing, and then give away their equipment. But when the bottom falls out and they need to make up their margins, they either fire employees or cut entire companies off, and then they go on and then they repeat that process. That's not the most ethical way to do business, in my opinion, but it's also not illegal. So that's something that's happening. There's no question of that. Regardless of that, when we go up against one of these guys and they are quoting on managed print plans for an entire fleet of laser printers, but they're usually going in trying to sell new equipment, like, oh, you should get rid of all of these, you should do this, you should do that. We go in and say, we'll take your current equipment, the fleet as it is, even a lot of your aged machines, you don't have to buy any new equipment, and here's the CPCs you're going to get. You know, I'd say 7 out of 10 times that wins us the deal, but just based on those dynamics alone. If you add in our, you know, we have a monthly service plan where a technician touches every machine, cleans every machine, does preventive maintenance. There's a whole slew of other benefits that we offer. That is the antithesis of dropshipping toner and services needed. We can be very competitive in that, where we struggle a bit with corporate pricing for hardware.
Right, right. And what I would say with that particular model is it's sufficient today and foundational, but because, you know, you reside in the realm where you can be a little bit more creative, I would just leave that as a foundation, not as your number one pylon in your sales approach, and then start building additional services around that. So you don't sell MPS, you sell print policies when you're into those multiple numbers. And see, that's the thing that that a small provider, and I mean small only in the sense of the market that they address, and maybe even geography and number of employees. Because when you look at the big guys coming in, if it's 300 or 400, you know, and this is in that round 200-300 devices, there are plenty of other issues going on in that business environment beyond toner delivery and clean machines. So if that is a strength that you've got right now, make sure that we don't, you know, that our strength someday does not become our weakness, because that's all we do. All right. So, and this goes blanket across the country. Is you've got the opportunity, those providers have the opportunity to add on additional services, maybe not for free, and to repackage their offering to include more than just toner delivery service, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not talking EDM, just helping them manage. And if we take in consideration that these customers are going to naturally look to ways to erode prints in the first place, instead of trying to fight that or just live with it, maybe we should help them along and try and get some revenue out of that process as well. But the point here is,
yeah,
in that realm, you are the ones who can do it. And, you know, the big guys are not going to have that motivation. All right, they're not going to go into one of their device, see 100 HPs and decide that, all right, now we're going to reduce that down to 50. All right, that's
right.
No matter what they say, a reduction in machines is not part of anyone's quota. So, you know, the marketing can say one thing, but it gets right down to it. They're getting paid to put more devices out there. So, anyway.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely the truth. And I would agree with that. Well, moving on, since we did sort of touch upon the topics of remanufactured cartridges,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you a question about what I referred to on LinkedIn recently as the Clone Wars. There's a few people who are, quote-unquote, sounding the alarm, the sky's falling, because there are Chinese clones coming from China, obviously, which are essentially new-built cartridges that are reverse-engineered. And because of loopholes and laws, they're coming into the U.S. And just like back when remanufacturing first started, you know, the OEMs are saying certain things about the integrity of these cartridges, about all the problems
mm-hmm.
associated with them. And the shift on it this time around is that they're trying to say, oh, it's bad for the remanufacturing industry. And I know some OEMs are involved in remanufacturing, but it's largely independents who, you know, this is our playing field, so to speak. I haven't heard anyone from that field say anything negative about it. I'm intrigued because unless the cores themselves, the black plastic cores, are complete crap, there's really no reason to be worried about it. Now, if you're an OEM, there is definitely reason to be worried about it, and I understand that. And I wrote an article saying, yeah, sure, if you're an OEM, I can see why you would be afraid of this, because you're selling OEM spec cartridges, and if you have a recycling program, you're probably not refilling them. You're probably just shipping them back to China, honestly. It's something that is done because there's quote-unquote recycling programs in China, which ultimately just strips the precious metals and then burns the cores. Now, with my company, we take the core, fully remanufacture all the internal components, OEM spec parts, and brand new toner. It's not the drill and fill stuff that, you know, was very popular in the 90s and that caused a lot of problems. But it's, again, it's only the OEMs who seem to be saying this. But what's funny is this time around, they're trying to be like, oh, it's the remanufacturing industry that should be worried about this, almost like they're trying to get a rallying cry from us, the little guys, when it's their problem. Like, what are your thoughts on what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know that much about the clones. I mean, and I'll ask you, if it's a clone from China, can it still be dissembled and reassembled? Is that the theory there? And we're not talking about anything structural. We're talking about patents and trademarks and things like that. Is that true?
Well, that's the thing,
Nathan.
The patents and trademarks, it's not really a problem, and that's what
mm-hmm.
the OEMs are scared of, because there's loopholes in international law that is allowing these to come into the country. They're essentially, I mean, they're new builds, they're brand new cartridges.
Okay.
Of course, they're being made by third-party Chinese companies rather than the OEMs, but since they're reverse engineering, they're ultimately identical. Now, I've done a lot of research on this, and I'm hearing from, you know, smaller organizations that, yeah, you can refill these, you can remanufacture them. You know, unfortunately, some people are drilling and filling them, but I'm not getting any evidence that, you know, if we got our hands on this core, and I suppose that'll be the ultimate kicker. I mean, if anybody's listening, if you want to mail me one of these Chinese cores, I'll gladly record the entire thing. I'll have my production facility reman one, we'll put it in a printer and we'll see if it works. I personally think that, because the cores, it's just a black chunk of plastic. It's a petroleum byproduct. It's pretty hard to screw up something as simple as a core, as far as I'm concerned. It's the internal components that you got to worry about. And again, we replace everything but the core. So I think OEMs are.
But here's, it doesn't matter. All right, the loopholes are there. If you want to compare a knockoff Gucci to a knockoff HP cartridge from China, all right, you can try that. It really doesn't matter. If it's only $3, people are going to buy it. All right, that's the key. I think what happens on our side is we start to concentrate more on, you know, what does this mean? What can we do with it? Can we drill? Can we pull it? You put it in a box or sell it to a customer. If it doesn't blow up their machine, they're not going to be too concerned one way or another, right? They're going to get whatever they want. If you blow up a machine, then there's going to be an issue. And I doubt that's going to happen now. If it does, then it just goes away. I think that combination of people not really caring that much about print, not really worrying too much anymore about toner cartridges blowing up. If the Chinese stuff is coming across legally, it's less expensive, and there's still a market for it, it's going to get sold. There's just no way around it. Now, if they can close the loopholes, and there's, again, I don't know all the legalities, but if there are some illegalities, and I'm not saying there aren't, it sounds kind of shady to me, but, you know, who am I? I used to think the remands were shady, right? Going in and pulling out cores from the dumpster and pulling them apart and putting it back together. Okay, the same battle cry was called by the OEMs back then against the remands.
And that's understandable. I mean,
a lot of
people in the 90s were, you know, drilling holes and filling with toner. The correct way to do it is to replace everything but the core. So you're getting basically a new cartridge.
Right.
And you had asked me about a week ago, like, how many times can you really remanufacture a cartridge? Now, in our marketing brochures that we did for years, I mean, we're in our 26th or 27th year of business at this point, I believe, off the top of my head. Anyway. I went to our production facility and I talked to my production manager and said, you know, 5 or 6 times, this is definitely realistic, correct? Like, I want to know, as a salesman, I want to, you know, talk to everybody in my company and find out if this is legit. And she said, well, no. As a matter of fact, I've seen cartridges come back and get refilled over 100 times, you know, which is astounding.
Because
the black core is, you know, it's just a solid black chunk piece of plastic. As long as you don't crack the core and you can get the appropriate chips, if everything inside is brand-new OEM spec part, you're essentially getting a brand-new cartridge for a fraction of the price. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people would try to argue that, but we've been in business for over 20 years for a reason. If remands didn't work, or at least ones that were done correctly, you know, we wouldn't be in business today.
Yep, that's right. So. Sounds good.
All right. Well, moving on. Let's see. What advice would you give to both just hardware reps and also folks like myself who are selling not only hardware but managed print services plans for 2017? Like, what would be 3 bullet points you could give to those of us in the industry who would, you know, like to pick your brain?
Okay. So even from the trenches, let's say you're a sales rep and you've got a copier quota and maybe some MPS quotas and things like that. The best thing I could recommend for a rep is to, A, invest in themselves. You're in the best opportunity. You are in the best area to learn sales. All right. And no one grows up wanting to be a copier salesman. There's no classes that say, hey, how to sell copiers. But everyone in the world sells. Right, everybody sells, and these skills that you grow, whether they're from cold calling to presentations, it's all about communicating and establishing relationships, working within organizations, and achieving, you know, common goals. This is a great time to do that, a great place to do it. So self-improve. Whether your organization is doing it or not, if you're selling copiers and selling MPS, look to other additional services, additional problems that you can solve. On a personal basis, because there's going to be an opportunity in the future where people are not going to be always interested in a copier as they are in helping solve business workflow problems that we in the industry have been doing for years. We've been doing it. I mean, we've been part of that for a long time. So look for other things.
Great.
Well, and then third, one more thing is just be cheerful. I mean, people are saying a lot of bad things about the industry from the outside, but it's going to be okay. Everyone's going to get through it.
Well, I would have to agree with you there, Greg. Well, we're just coming to the end of the podcast. It's going to auto stop soon. I definitely hope to do this again. I hope to turn this into a regular show. I will certainly have you back. I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate your time. So I'm wishing you and your family a Merry Christmas, and we'll reconnect in the future for sure.
Sounds good. This was a blast. I'd love to do it again. And, yes, Merry Christmas and good fortune in 2017.
Likewise. All right. You take care, Greg.
All right.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.